From One World Trade Center in Manhattan, overlooking dozens of golf courses that will never have us as members, this is the Golf Digest Podcast.
Welcome to the Golf Digest Podcast. This is Sam Wyman. We are coming to you live from Oakmont Country Club outside of Pittsburgh. In the world of sports psychology, no name looms larger than Dr. Bob Rotella. When Golf Digest ranked the top 10 psychologists in golf, Dr. Bob was number one. And I would imagine his schedule is especially busy on a week like this, where the U.S. Open is such a test, both physically and mentally. Dr. Bob is the author of a number of best-selling books, including Golf is Not a Game of Perfect and How Champions Think. And he joins me today on the Golf Digest Podcast. Okay, I'm here with Dr. Bob Rotella, the preeminent sports psychologist, especially in golf. Dr. Bob, thank you for joining me.
Good to be here.
So this is a busy week. I would imagine maybe the busiest week of all for you in terms of the mental challenge that a U.S. Open presents. So talk to me a little bit about how busy you are this week.
Well, I'm pretty busy, which I like. But I think having walked the course yesterday, my guess is it's going to be the first real traditional U.S. Open setup in at least 5 years. I think the players are thrilled with the golf course and the condition it's in. The setup is fantastic. I mean, it's, you know, I think most of them, and I agree, that the Open should be very different from the other tournaments, and it should be a really stern test, and it should eliminate people who can't handle how difficult it is and how tough it is and how much patience they have to have and the ability to just stay up and hang in there. And I think this week is going to really do it. And, you know, coming here, I said, yeah, I hope it's windy and they don't get rain. It sounds like we're going to get some rain, but having seen the golf course, the rough is, the ball's going down to the bottom of it. You can hit out of it, but it's a flyer. And so you're landing it 40 yards short of the green and kind of hoping it stops where you want it to. And if it rains, okay, it'll soften the greens a bit, but the rough is going to be so heavy that it's not going to make it easy. It's going to be a good test. So.
It's an interesting point that you raise about guys being thrilled that it's a traditional. I would imagine a big part of a player's preparation and getting themselves in the right mindset is the sort of first impressions of a golf course, whether they like it. So back up for a second. When you arrive at Opens, I'm sure you have, where the players just don't like the golf course, what's the challenge there from a mental standpoint?
Well, I think they have to find a way to love it before the tournament starts. But my initial point was I think most players would like to see the Open be a really stern test. And they'd like to see it be on a really good golf course and on a golf course that looks like an American golf course. And I just think they're very happy with this. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've heard guys say, I wish they'd come back here every 5 years. It's such a good course. I mean, why are we messing around? You know, but it's, it'll test them. And the greens are really fast, but they're really true. I mean, roll uphill and downhill the same. You know, it's not like they're really slow going uphill and fast downhill. They're just really good.
So there's not a lot. I mean, it sounds like there's not a lot that you need to do from the standpoint of preparing them for the test. They know what this is all about. Oakmont, obviously, everyone says it's, you know, on the short list of the toughest courses in the world. So they know going in. So I guess they have to just prepare for the ups and downs of that.
Well, now that it's the way you want to see a U.S. Open, now you have to find out if you can handle it. You want to find out, but you know, the first thing is it's so easy to get perfectionistic going into the week that you want to get your swing perfect, your putting perfect, your wedge is perfect. And it can really lead guys to getting so into their golf swing that they start guiding and steering off the tees. And my guess is a lot of guys will hit a lot of irons and fairway woods and hybrids off tees. I mean, it's not exceptionally long. So you know you want to be in the fairway a lot. You better accept it. When you get a bad bounce and it goes in the church pew bunkers or in the rough. But it's really, I mean, you got to be strong enough to trust it and let it go, but together enough to be accepting of it when it doesn't, say, okay, I got to go find a way to get it in the hole from here. And you know, one guy's going to have a terrible lie in the rough. And maybe once in a while someone's going to get a nice lie. But I would say in general the ball's rolling down. So it's pretty fair. I don't think we're going to have a lot of unfair stuff happening. In general, if you're in the fairway bunkers, you're going to be wedging outside.
Sure.
So, I mean, it's, I think that's all pretty natural for those guys to like that. But then it's, okay, this is hard. And can you make, you know, three bogeys in a row and not freak out? I was listening to Larry Nelson talk about his final round and when he won, and he's talking about how he had 2-3 putts, you know, which you wouldn't think happened on Sunday when you win. But, I mean, it's a good test of golf. And if it gets windy out, and again, I'd love to see some wind and the ball bounce around, but, you know, I think they got to take what they get. You're going to have probably a couple thunderstorms. So you got to be ready to deal with delays.
Sure.
I think the biggest thing is these guys are spending a lot of time hitting. I mean, it's unbelievable how many wedge shots they hit on every hole in the practice
room. Meaning they're going to have to wedge out and hack out and then wedge on.
Well, around the greens, I mean, they're trying to get it up and down. And what's amazing is, like, yesterday, the guys are struggling with it. I promise you, by Wednesday, they'll have hit so many. They'll still take these big old swings from 10 feet off the green in a deep rough, and they'll hit a lot of great shots.
Wow.
So, I mean, it'll go from really difficult to they'll get the hang of it. But when the ball starts releasing on these greens, I mean, it's a good test. You're going to make some bogeys, and it's different. You know, I mean, that there's a good chance that it's over par that wins. But if the conditions were perfect, it wouldn't surprise me. I was actually asking, you're seeing some guys yesterday, even on hole number 3, you know, it's 308, I think, from the back tee to carry the left church pew bunkers. There's going to be 12 guys or so that can carry those bunkers. And they've added some, I understand. I think there used to be like 8 church pews, and now there's 12 or something. So, I mean, they keep extending it, but these guys keep getting longer. But on the other hand, if you're swinging a driver that hard to hit it that far, there's a good chance you're going to be in the rough. And
sure.
That you mentioned not steering. I think one of the things you talk about in your books is sort of not letting conscious thought get in the way. Like, so willing the ball onto the fairway, it sounds like it's one of the worst things you can do. So especially this week when there's such a penalty for missing a fairway, what is the process that you ask a player to go through when they're on the tee and not steering the ball?
Well, I think it begins before you even get to the golf course with the idea that, okay, I'm going to be in the rough some, no matter what I do. The most difficult one is when you hit an iron or a hybrid off the tee to get it in the fairway, and it ends up in the rough.
Yeah.
And now you got to accept it. You know, it's almost easier to accept it if you decide you're going to rip driver.
Sure.
And it's up 50 yards further, and it's in the rough. You say, well, I took a chance. You know, now I got to live with it. But when you're trying to be smart and conservative and patient, and you end up in the rough, and now you're 50 yards further back, now you have to really have your head together, and it's going to happen.
Sure.
And so, I mean, I think before you go to the golf course, you get your head in this state of mind where, like, no matter what I do, whether I hit it there or it bounces there, and the difference here, like, if you're, like, 3 feet out of the bunker versus it rolling in the bunker, it's, you know, half a shot to a shot. So, I mean, you have to be ready for it and prepare for it. So they're doing a lot of time in their room at night. You know, I get it started, but they're rehearsing it a lot. They're trying to prepare for anything and everything that could possibly happen to them during a round of golf and know that they're prepared for dealing with it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's how you respond to the stuff that happens.
Sure.
And you got to be strong enough to do it. And, you know, everyone's going to be okay if they make a bogey or two. It's like if you get to 4 or 5 over par.
Sure.
Can you hang in there and get it back to 1 or 2 and keep yourself in the ball game early in the week? And that's can get away from you.
That's another good point, which is that you're going to have a string of bogeys, and the inclination is, okay, if I make a few birdies, I'm right back in it. Which here, trying to make birdies, I would imagine, is dangerous because, or maybe not. Maybe being aggressive is the way you want to be, but you know. Thinking that you have to make up ground in a hurry, I can imagine being potentially counterproductive.
Well, I'd say there's enough chances on this course where you're going to have a wedge in your hand and a scoring club, and they're going to have pins tucked. And usually, you're always going after those pins. This week, if you go after them and miss, you're going to get hammered. On the other hand, if you execute it, you get a really nice putt. But I think you're going to see an awful lot of guys saying, I want to stay below the pins. I want to go for the middle of the greens and take my chances with my putter. I think that's what you're going to see a lot. Now, the other big thing for U.S. Open is you really find out who believes they can win a U.S. Open. And the problem is, first of all, you got to believe it and get comfortable with it. But second of all, a lot of guys have the wrong image of how you win a U.S. Open. The dream is you're pure every driver. You hit it to a foot and tap it in for birdie, and it's like the perfect round of golf and the perfect week of your life. And it never happens that way.
Right.
Okay, I guess we could say the last day it happened for Johnny Miller here after a lot of rain. But, I mean, and that, you know, I guess if you're way behind like he was and you can go for everything because you have no other option, but if you're in the hunt, it's a different ballgame.
Right.
And I just think you got to be ready to deal with it. That it's going to be you may hole one from the rough.
Right.
You may top one, and it might roll up the fairway and go in the hole. I mean, it doesn't happen the way they dream it up. It's very different from that.
That's a really good point. You know, this whole idea that you're going to make the winning birdie, more likely it's going to be you're going to make two bogeys on the back nine and have a crucial par save. Like, that's the visualization you need to have to win a U.S. Open.
Yeah, I was talking to Angel Cabrera, and Charlie Epps, his teacher. They were saying, like, on 17 when he won, he hits a 5-iron off the tee because he wants to lay back to, like, 100 yards. So he wants to hit it 200. And he's got so much adrenaline going, he hits it to 250. And now he has like a 55, 60-yard shot that he ends up putting in the bunker on 17. And then he comes back to 18 and just rips driver. And, you know, I remember him telling me once that he felt like when he stood on that tee box, he felt like he was the king of the world when I hit driver. And I go, yeah, good. Yeah, I mean, that was one of the greatest drives I've ever seen in my life. And, you know, that was a heck of a driver pitching wedge into that green because it's a long hole. You don't see people hit it 346 off the tee on that hole straight as a string. So you hit some shots like that, but it's can you deal with all the other stuff? Like maybe you hit the perfect putt from 6 feet and it breaks the exact opposite of what you thought. You know? And you have to deal with that when you did everything right. So there's a lot of times where you do everything right. Like you're going to hit some balls that land on these greens and just bounce. Like we're watching guys at number three. I mean, the wind's in your face, and they hit it on the front of the green, and it's going over the back. And once it goes an inch over the back, it's 40 yards off the green. And you just watch guys when they're practicing, they're hitting pitches and putts. It's unbelievable how many balls get to the front foot, the back foot of the green, and then roll all the way back to their feet.
Right.
And that's the kind of stuff that, you know, it's like 6 inches from perfect, and it ends up being right back where you started. And can you handle that? And this is what happens a lot in opens, is guys start complaining about the USGA.
Right.
You start getting mad at the USGA, getting mad at the setup. What are these idiots doing? Because they're used to the PGA Tour setting it up.
Sure.
They want to see birdies and eagles for television, and it's our show, and you know we're showing off for the world. And now, why are they beating us up? Like, why are they? And all of a sudden, it starts becoming they're stupid. They're idiots. Why are they doing this stuff? Why are they doing this? This is so ridiculous. And I have to say, well, now, if you want to play in a U.S. Open, it's supposed to be hard. It's supposed to be difficult. It's supposed to test your insides. And this is what a U.S. Open is. It's not this other thing that you're pretending it's supposed to be.
Okay.
This is what it's supposed to be like. And to me, if it doesn't bring that stuff out, it's not like a U.S. Open. So I'm excited about what we're going to face, and I think that the better players want to have their insides tested. And I always tell people, I don't know if it's in the mind or the heart or the soul or the human spirit, but it's inside of you somewhere.
Sure.
You know, in other sports, we always use the term, it's gut check time. And I'd say, well, when you get to the U.S. Open, it's gut check time, which means you're going to get your insides ripped out of you from time to time. And you're going to do a lot of right things and get bad break, and you've got to be able to deal with it. And you know, to a large extent, that's what it's about.
Speaking of gut checks, we've already seen a bunch of footage this week on social media of guys hitting putts and the ball rolling 20 feet past the pin. You're going to see that all week. And it's something a lot of amateurs can relate to. They hit a putt, they thought it was a good putt, and it flies past, and they have to sort of get themselves back in the mindset for the next putt. So what is the self-talk that needs to take place between that first putt that flies by and the next putt?
Well, first of all, I think when players send all that stuff out on social media, they're marketing. They're trying to show how hard it is and how difficult it is and how ridiculous it is and difficult. But the truth is, I mean, by the time the tournament starts, they're going to know what every putt does.
Sure.
And they've got good touch. And, I mean, I've played tournaments on this course. I mean, the greens are very puttable.
Yeah.
But you just better use some sense about it. I mean, you better make them softly.
Right.
You know, but I mean, I think they'll adjust to all that stuff. It's really more of when you do just what you wanted to do and you catch the lip of the cup.
Sure.
And you get a power lip and it takes off. You know, if you hit it harder than you had in mind, you know it's gone.
Sure.
They'll know which parts of the green the ball really takes off on. It's just dealing with the fact that it's on edge,
right.
You know, and it's like you don't have total control over it, and these guys are used to having control.
Totally.
And when that ball gets down the rough, I mean, you're not going to just take one less club and land it on the green and have it stop. I mean, you're going to be landing 50 yards short of the green, and there's some luck involved in all the ball bounces. On the other hand, there's a lot of skill involved. And looking at the lie, getting a feel for how fast it's going to come out and how far it's going to roll and which way it's going to bounce. I mean, starting right on number one.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at that hole and you think you got to hit it way down the right side with your second shot and it's going to really bounce left and it goes dead straight until it gets to the green. And then when it gets to the green, it goes straight left.
Right.
And then if you go over the back of the green. And so, I mean, and I guess a long time ago it was a par five, but now it's a good four.
Right.
And it's like, okay, how far up the hill do you land it? Like, some guy's going to land it 70 yards short of the green and hope you get the right bounce.
Right.
And so, I mean, it's got some feelings of almost playing in Scotland or somewhere that there's going to be a lot of shots this week where
right.
you're not just landing it on the green and stopping it. And I just love it because it brings out a lot of imagination.
Sure.
I mean, Fonz must have been a genius.
Or a masochist, yeah.
Yeah.
We talk a little bit about preparing for bad breaks and not playing well, because that seems like a big part of what goes with US Open. The other side of it is, I'm sure you've had this dozens of times, you have a guy who suddenly is now in contention to win the US Open. So it's Saturday night, and I have a chance to win the US Open tomorrow. What is the thought process that you are trying to get them to embrace?
Well, first of all, it's different for a guy who's been there before or has won one of these or a major before, because they're a little used to handling all the media attention
mm-hmm.
that goes with it. If you've never been there before and you don't usually get a lot of the media attention, all of a sudden you go from no one knows who you are to everyone wants to know mm-hmm. everything about you. And you got to make a decision. How long am I going to spend talking with these people? You know, how many interviews am I going to do?
Right.
What am I going to do on Sunday morning when I get out of my car and people greet me in the parking lot, you know, and want to talk to me?
Cameras on you.
Yeah. And you better have gone through how you're going to handle it. And some guys, they're not going to talk with them until after. Some are going to. Some are going to say, I'm going to do a little bit of it, but from this moment on, I'm going to stop talking and I'm going to get my head where I need to get it. And if it doesn't work, you'll get second-guessed no matter what you do. So you have to make up your mind. I think the biggest thing is you got to say, I got to stay loose and free, and I got to go out there and play my game. And, I mean, you just got to say, I got to go do what I've been doing all week. And that's the hard part, is to be yourself and play your game. And, part of it is you can't be in awe of other players. You can't be in awe of the U.S. Open trophy. You can't be spending your time out there thinking about what this is going to mean for your bank account and for your going down in the history
right.
books. But the truth is, you know, there's four tournaments that put you in the history
sure.
books. And I hope that doesn't change, because it makes these different. And so I would say that there's probably the majority of players, at least the American players, would pick winning the U.S. Open
sure.
as the tournament they'd most like to win, not only because it's the United States Open Championship, you know, represents something important, but because it's known for being hard. So, I mean, you get a lot of respect for yourself and other players. You know, I think, you know, somebody might say it's the British Open. Someone might say it's the Masters. Someone might say the PGA. But, you know, the Masters would be more because you get to go back every year forever.
Sure.
But, I mean, I think there's an awful lot of players who would value this one at the top of their list.
If that's the case, though, I mean, the reward is so great. How do you distance yourself from that when you're about to tee off?
Yeah, I mean, we downplay it totally. By the time they get to the first tee, they're so lost into their little world where they have a mental process and routine they're going to do on every shot. And, you know, I like guys to go from the first to the last green to think to them in their head going over constantly. I got to get looser and freer and cockier. I got to be more in love with myself and my game. I got to be patient, and I got to just keep committing and doing my process on every shot. And, I mean, that's what these guys get really good at doing. Now, if you haven't ever done it in a major before, it's a little different.
Sure.
But it's very doable. But you find out if you really believe in what you've been practicing.
You often hear in tournaments, this happens a lot, where a guy will lose a tournament afterwards he'll say, I'm really proud of myself. I didn't play that badly. I you know, hit every shot I wanted to hit, or however he phrases it. But there's a lot of positive affirmations after the round. How much of that is him, how much of that is your work, you know, or a work of people like yourself who are trying to tell them to not beat themselves up?
Well, I you know, depends on the guy.
Sure.
Certainly the players I work with, we've gone over it a million times. And so, you know, we use the word, we keep hammering it.
Yeah.
Because you got to make it into a habit. The first thought that came to my mind, I remember when Darren Clark won the British Open. I've told him, I don't know how many times since then. I mean, we'd worked on it all week. He was in a great place. Sunday morning, he's playing with Dustin Johnson. And I walk him to the first tee. And he gives me an embrace and a hug. And in the last words, he said to me, Doc, I just want to thank you. And he said, if I go out there and have fun today and trust myself and let it go on every shot, I'm going to be a happy man regardless of whether I win or don't. And every time I see him, I said, I'm telling you, Darren, that was the greatest thing you could have ever said. Because if you had ever looked at me and said, I better win. If I don't win, I may never have a chance to win one of these again. It'll kill me. I would have gone, oh, God, we're in trouble.
Sure.
And I said, it was music to my ears. Now, people might think that sounds negative, what he said, but it really was the most positive thing in the world, that this is the only thing I own.
Sure.
I own my mind and my emotions and my game, and I'm going to go play my game and do what I want to do. And if I do that, if someone else lights it up and beats me, I can live with it. Well, they really want to win the battle with themselves.
Sure.
It sounds kind of corny, but you go out there, and it's like me against me and my mind and my emotions and my body. And can I get my mind to let my body do stuff that I've already seen myself do a million times in practice on this day, in this tournament? And, I mean, that's ultimately what really makes these guys happy. I mean, do they like it when they get the trophy and they get the money and all that that goes with it? But ultimately, if they walk off the course and say, man, that's how I want to think and feel, and I let myself do what I wanted to do out here, they can be happy if someone else...
Sure.
You know, just plays out of their gourd and beats them. You have to live with it, you know. But
that sounds like there's basically two kinds of success. There's the success of I had shot the lowest score and won the tournament, but there's also the success of I stuck to my process. I did all the things that I set out to do today, and it just didn't happen. Or
yeah, and you know, my line on that is if you have to be the winner to feel like a winner, then you're in big trouble in this game. So in a lot of ways, personally, we redefine winning as winning the battle with yourself and playing the way you're capable of playing and living with the outcome, because that's all you own.
Can you give me an example of a player you've worked with who maybe didn't win the tournament but was such a great breakthrough for him because of how they handled the situation?
I mean, you know, almost everyone I've worked with, I mean, we've got 84 major wins on the different major tours and majors, and all of them have had some experience where they came in second or third, but loved how they felt. Now, the extreme would be Padraig Harrington. The first time Padraig told me he was going to win majors was after, it was on a Friday afternoon after missing the cut.
Amazing.
And I was going to meet him on the putting green. He walks up and tells me that I now know I'm going to win majors. Now, what do you mean? He goes, well, I was able to get my mind and my emotions where I wanted today. I let myself hit every shot and putt the way I wanted to. I now know that I can handle this situation. He said, I had two pitching wedges that went a foot long and over the back of the green that cost me, and I had a couple of lip outs. Otherwise, I'd be playing. But he said, I now know that I can do this. I said, good. But I mean, that's ultimately what you have to find out. And believe me, they all wonder, can my mind, my emotions, you know, can I allow myself to do stuff? Because they've all seen themselves do it in practice. You go to the practice area, you can't tell who's the top player and who's 125th. I mean, they all look pretty darn good. But that's ultimately what we're after.
Sure. No, that makes a lot of sense. Listen, Dr. Bob, really appreciate it. Good luck this week, and thank you so much for joining me.
Good to be with you, Sam.
Thanks again to Dr. Bob Rotella for joining me on this week's Golf Digest podcast. Bob is joining us thanks to Standard Life Investments, a worldwide partner of the Ryder Cup. Their latest campaign, World Class as Standard, takes a detailed look at what it takes to deliver world-class performance through an online film series. For more information, visit standardlifeinvestments.com. Check back next week on the Golf Digest podcast to see who our guests are, and make sure you subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.